Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, Long Beach, to another edition of Swoop's World right here at blogtalkradio.com. Swoop's World, where you get all you need to know about arts, culture, news, and happenings here in Long Beach. Our number, if you want to call in, is 917-889-7449. You can email us at swoopsworld@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Once again, you want to call in tonight, that number is 917-889-7449. Sit back and enjoy another edition of Swoop's World. Hey, Long Beach and all of Southern California, welcome to another Wednesday night here at Swoop's World. And quite a few guests we're going to have on tonight. We're going to talk about the business of art. And before we get started on that, Peter, what's happening?
Soccer. Soccer started today officially for my kids. Today my son practiced, and tomorrow I'm coaching my daughter's team. So soccer is all-consuming this week.
Ah, sounds like fun.
How you define fun?
I just came from my son's soccer practice, so yeah, it's that time, you know, that time of year, so everybody's getting going. And he also has book reports to do when school starts for him, so we went to the library today to pick up some books for him to read, and we had a little disagreement on what's a classic and what's not a classic. He decides by how many pages are in a book.
He's very practical minded. You gotta love that about him.
It's gotta be a classic, Dad. I said, all right. So we go to the classic session. He grabs a couple books. 400 pages. Puts it back on the shelf. So he picked out a couple. I picked out one for him, you know, but he didn't like the one I picked out. So we had a little tete-a-tete there. it's good. It's all good. He's gonna read it anyway just to make me happy. So, I mean, old man in the sea, man. I like that. So. It's a classic, right?
There you go.
Well, you know, a couple of people have been wondering what the business of art is going to be about. And, this all stemmed from a conversation we had several times over the last few months with different artists and different people. And, you know, one of the things that kept coming up was how are artists, you know, making money with all the new, you know, with all the events that go on in any city, not just Long Beach. And one of the things that was discussed is when a lot of times when these art events first start off, the artists seem to be making sales because it's an art event. And as they tend to grow, music, you know, you get the bands showing up and you got, you know, free wine, free cheese at different places and stuff like that. Sometimes sales tend to drop off.
That's been our experience. It almost becomes a scene where people are showing up to people watch, they're showing up to listen to the oftentimes free band, and as you point out, free booze will always bring people in. Not necessarily the people you want, but you'll get numbers.
Right.
And that does seem to oftentimes be the case with what we've experienced. So it's a tricky thing because obviously you got to have numbers.
Right.
And because if there aren't people there, you got no one to sell to. But at the same time, you got to have the right numbers, the right people. People are interested in art.
Right.
And not just the museum goer people, because you want those people too, you know, the people who just love art and want to look at it. But you got to have the people that love art, want to look at it, and also would like to buy some of it.
Yeah, and then the tricky thing about a lot of events is, you know, like when you begin in the beginning and the art's selling, the numbers of people aren't showing up. So the event planners or the city or whatever wants to see more people come out. When you add all the other things to it and you do create a scene, you have thousands of people showing up, but the people who got it started are still starving. So we're going to go through that and any other topics on the business of art that you think about. We're always doing a little beer tasting. What do you got there, Peter?
Well, this is something new. I haven't heard of the company before, the brewery before. It's called Andy Gator. It's from Abita. It's a
Louisiana beer.
The Louisiana beer, exactly right. And
that voice you hear in the background, that's Taylor. That'll be a food review, and he should know it. He's a food guy, right?
That's right. So, a Hellesbock is a Helles double box. So it's like a light double beer. Like a double box is usually a heavy beer with like twice as much alcohol, generally speaking. This is a light beer, lighter beer, not a light beer, but more like a light, like a lager beer with about twice as much and it's interesting. I just had my first sip of it, and I'll have to let you know as we go through the night here.
All right, we'll be tasting it. And like I said, Taylor Nelson's here in the studio with us, and a good friend of ours, Scott Godfrey's in the studio with us. And Scott, among other things, is an artist and a musician, and he'll have a few things to say on this. And if not, he'll just sit here and sip beer with it. So,
I would like to say that as an artist, I've never made a cent off of anything I've ever created. So I'm probably the starting point of this conversation. So hopefully the ending point will be somebody who actually makes money. So you can always start with me here, the bottom of the barrel.
You know, before we get this whole thing rolling, I got to tell this quick story. You know, everybody's on Facebook. Scott posted the funniest thing on Facebook a while back. He said he found one of his original CDs because, you know, he's in a band. On eBay, going for, what, 87 cents? Starting bid, 80 cents.
I didn't even bid.
It wasn't autographs, obviously.
And it would have been 85. And I didn't even bid on it.
All right, hey, gang. Well, we're going to get this thing started. We're going to go to a quick break. Actually, we're not going to take a quick break. We're going to play a quick song for you. Some of you know that we had Michelle Mangione and Grace Slick on recently. They combined to write a song called The Edge of Madness. All proceeds go to help out the fishermen in the Gulf that are struggling as a result of the BP oil spill. We're going to let you hear that, and we'll come back to the business of art.
Who will hear our story? Who will see this hell? Who will bring us justice? Tell me who will. Calling him back to a Cajun girl so pretty. Old men sit outside, the bars tell stories they can't forget. Songs fly up to the evening stars on distant clouds. Now he sees the sorrow and the anger of the crowd. She says, rise up for tomorrow.
Tell me. At the Edge of Madness from Michele Mangione and Grace Slick. And we're going to bring up, we have quite a few guests on the line, and we're going to bring everybody up individually. And I'm going to introduce them. You've already met Scott Godfrey, and you know Taylor Nelson, and Ray Polk is here. So say hi, Ray. We're going to bring up, we have Paul Dopplis, who I'm going to be bringing up here in just a second. He's out as well. He manages a gallery, and Peter knows him real well. We go way back.
Join us. Joining soccer today.
Hey, Paul, let me get somebody else up. We're going to get everybody on, and then we'll try to maneuver through this. We have Misty Muse is going to be popping in, and she's over at the cellar right now. Hi, Misty, you're on?
Hey, yes, I'm still here. How are you? Hello?
And how you doing, Misty?
Can you hear me okay?
What's going on?
Shoddy reception. I'm hoping it'll work out. But I'm here if you can hear me.
We can hear you.
Okay, cool.
Doing, man? I can see him. No, Antonio? All right, we'll put him on hold. We'll try him again here in a second.
Something's wrong with your mic.
Everything froze up, man. The whole thing froze up.
Well, keep talking. We're still live.
Still live? Do we have Antonio?
We have Antonio.
There's something wrong with your mic on your end.
We're getting a lot of breakup right now.
Yeah, you're breaking up. Can you hear me? You guys may have to go whatever.
All right. Swoop's having some problems with on his end.
Are we coming through?
I'm coming through.
Oh, is it only
and then,
Keith?
It's only Keith? Swoop's here. Me. Hello.
All right.
Can
you hear me real well?
Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now?
I'm not on the phone.
Can you hear me now?
You hear me?
Yeah.
The show tonight is about the business of art, and everybody on here has something is involved in the art earlier. This all grew out of some conversations we had earlier. Art events and whether or not artists were making money at the events, because a lot of different things that go on as they grow when you bring in we're going to talk about the fact that you have to. Are we breaking up again?
Yeah. Then you can reconnect.
You're there.
All right. Can everybody hear me now? We're having some problems with our microphone. No, we're still. It's the whole program. It looks like. All right. Anyhow, we haven't had this problem in quite a few weeks now, so we thought we'd got this all squared away. All right. We've had over the years. We talked about these great events.
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah,
this is Antonio. This is Antonio. I think there's something wrong with Keith's mic or his connection. I think that's what the problem is. But have we disconnected altogether now?
No, I can hear you.
Okay. So I think they're rebooting or something. Don't you just love internet radio?
A little peace and quiet is always fun.
I think they're rebooting and reconnecting. And we can't do anything until they come back up.
Hello. Can anybody hear me now?
Yes, we're all here.
Okay. So Swoop is
booting.
He's reloading. He's getting back on. We haven't had this problem in a long time, so I thought we'd solved all this. So let's just move on with the subject. This all grew out of a number of conversations we had over the years about great art events where lots of people show up. And what comes to mind is places like the Art Walk down in San Diego, where they brag about 200,000 people showing up in 2 or 3 days. But you see surprisingly few people carrying packages, carrying art, carrying sculpture or anything. And so we thought we should have a conversation about the business of art. How do you, especially if you're not going to go the more traditional route, or even if you are going to go the more traditional route of the gallery and an agent and what have you, how does that work and how does one break into it? And then we have a number of people in that whole range of people who are successful artists and those who are just getting started off, as well as Paul Dobbius, who is an art dealer, somebody who's been doing that for almost 30 years now. And so that's kind of the premise of the show. I think Swoop's almost back on. Maybe not. It looks like my screen just dropped. Can anybody hear me? I can hear you. Okay, good.
We all can hear you. We're still there.
All right, so Swoop will be with us in a moment, but let's start with Antonio, since we know we got you on. We can hear you. First of all, tell us a little bit about yourself. And then let us know where you are in the art process in Long Beach.
Well, now I hear you as an echo. This is actually a really interesting subject. I just finished the first part of a 2-part series on investing in the city, investing in the arts, and investing in the city. Second part is next Monday at 8:00. And, if you talk to people, artists who've been here for a very long time, and I'm talking about mostly visual artists, sculptors, people who are going to exhibit in a gallery, I mean, they'll tell you that there's great stories about great galleries here in Long Beach. The problem is that somewhere, I guess, maybe late 90s, early 2000s, they started to disappear because there just wasn't the sustainability for them. There's still a couple of galleries, as we well know. One, actually, sort of a cooperative gallery on Linden. There's a couple of cooperative galleries on Pine, and there's some on Broadway. But for the most part, they've all have disappeared. And this creates some real interesting dilemmas for artists who want to exhibit in Long Beach, because that's probably the biggest complaint I hear is exhibition space, lack of exhibition space, lack of ability to sell their stuff. So I don't have an answer for it. I'm curious to hear more about that.
Well, you talk about galleries. We actually have Paul Dopplis on the line, who actually manages a gallery. Paul,
right.
Tell us what you think about emerging artists and galleries.
Galleries are like any retail establishment, and whenever you discuss retail establishments, the cliche is location, location, location.
Right.
And the company I work for has 25 galleries, and they're all successful. And every single one of those galleries is in a tourist destination location, and that's because Antonio used the word sustainability. Sustainability, for example, the gallery I'm working at here in San Diego, has a population base of 1.5 million. Well, we can't survive on that. We have to have the entire United States to deal with. And that is, Long Beach is a wonderful city. It's a beautiful place, and I don't know a lot about it, but I mean, I know that it, some things. But, if there's a gallery at the Queen Mary, it's going to succeed. If there's a gallery, say, in a very high traffic location, it's going to succeed. And that's the place that emerging artists would have to try and get into, because that's the only way they can get exposure. And earlier, I don't know if it was Swoop or Peter that was making the discussion about Art Walk and art events. I know artists who are vagabonds. They go to They spend all summer, spring and autumn, going to art fairs like our walk all across the United States, and they do sell their artwork. They do make a living, and they do support themselves at it. They're not going over the top or anything like that. But it location is incredibly important. Tourism, you know, I've worked for companies, this gallery system and the gallery system I worked before did a lot of studies, and they find that only about 12% of the populace collect art. So that's a very small segment of the population. For example, everybody wears jewelry, everybody wears clothes, but not everybody collects art, only about 12% of the populace. And most of the times when they collect the art is when they're on vacation. Go to Hawaii, there's galleries all over the place. Go to Las Vegas, there are galleries all over the place. That's because that's where people go. They're in a good mood. The both members of the buying couple, if they're high professionals, are there at the same time. You know, it's a remembrance of their trip. So these are extremely important things. You know, a local gallery and a local, we have the same thing happen in San Diego. We have lots of local galleries and local neighborhoods, and they're constantly going in and out of business because a local neighborhood cannot support a gallery with the type of numbers it needs to do to pay the rent.
You know, let's bring on Misty Muse, because Misty's a performance artist, and so the gallery aspect doesn't really affect her. Misty, what do you find is difficult about breaking in as a performance artist and actually showcasing your works?
Well, before we get into that, I was really intrigued to hear both Antonio and I can't remember the other gentleman's name. The sound on my end was a little fuzzy when it was set. Paul. There we go. Caught it.
in here.
Yes, indeed. The visual piece really resounds to me. There's through the work with OB Creative and the connections that we've made, I ran into a storefront over in Belmont Shores that I just happened to go in there and speak with the owner to leave a flyer of some sort, and there was this interesting art in the window, and come to find out there's an artist living in Belmont Shore who has shown in that storefront for over 25 years and has published a book with just all of the years storefronts that they've done at that location and other locations, and they're able to live in Belmont Shore off of their art. And then there's another artist friend of mine, a visual artist, who has, like was mentioned with the artists who are just kind of vagabonds traveling from fairs to fair all over the nation, he sustained himself and put two of his kids through college. So, yeah, that's, I even though I may do a lot of performance, I do visual art a little bit, but I do primarily do visual. I do primarily do performance, but the visual strikes to me too because a lot of the friends I know are multidisciplined, are working in other disciplines besides the one that I'm more focused in. And then me, as a performer, the challenges are, you know, whether or not a person is familiar with your work or what, if the venue is in the business of putting on shows or are they just trying to put a show on to kind of bring people in. There are a lot of different challenges that come up, but for the most part, I've found a lot of opportunities just by getting out there, just by making acquaintances and understanding what's going on, and then also putting on events as well has been where I found some success.
Right. Now, do you find that people are willing to pay, or are you spending a lot of time doing things just to get your name and your voice out there, or is it a balancing act?
Yeah, it's both. You know, some of the best nights I've ever had maybe the Knitting Factory. I got booked to do that show. I was paid. The stage was awesome. The sound was awesome. There was an engineer on deck. I had backing musicians. That was awesome. And I've had quite a few instances like that. We've done some work with Magic Johnson's Foundation. He used to do a scholarship drive every year. That was another fabulous event where everything was paid for and the sound was right and everything was right. And then there's been some other events where, you know, I was just kind of testing out some new material, just kind of stepping out. I really wasn't concerned about being paid, and it wasn't presented to me either. It was just more of an open mic, you know, situation where you just go out and try stuff and just mingle it up with other artists who are trying stuff as well. So I've experienced both sides of the coin. Going forward, of course, I would like to see more paying gigs, but then I have to be in that position to do that as well. You know, make sure that I'm rehearsed, make sure that I have my press kit ready to go, make sure I have the time to dedicate to do those kind of shows. I don't just go in expecting payment, or nor should performing artists, you know, decide to do that unless they're putting in that time and that effort. If they are, you know, if their press kit is ready to go, their photos are up, they're doing all of their marketing, they're rehearsed, they are good at what they do, then yeah, absolutely, they should be getting paid.
That's cool. Scott, you've been on both sides of the issue as an artist and a musician. Have you shown at like these art walks, or have you performed at multifaceted events where there's art and music, or has your music performance, has that always been strictly like music gigs, or has it been a cross of other things going on?
As far as music goes, I've only played, I used to play in a rock band for a number of years, and we created a degree of local success, but still, it's amazing. We were a local band in a major city that would sell out clubs, up to like 500 people, and we'd still make not much more than like $1,000 for a gig. So it was, it's all right, there was an airplane in the background. So it was actually just like more or less just a self-sustaining, I don't want to call it a hobby because we worked really hard, but all we could really ever pay for was just our rehearsal space, or if I needed a new set of strings or whatever, but that was pretty much it. As I said at the beginning of the show, if you want to find out how not to make money for your artwork, I am the man to talk to. I've been very successful at being unsuccessful.
Paul, I have a question for you. I've known you've shown a lot of places. You've shown at San Diego Art Walk on many occasions. Have you noticed a change in the buying process when there's multiple things going on? I know, like with San Diego, Peter, we've talked about this. You have several music stages. You have the food things going on. It's a street fair now. Have you noticed a change in the buying? Go ahead.
One of the advantages of Art Walk is that when people go there, they're very primed or prone to buy art. The thing is that you have to see what your competition is. You have to be different. You have to have something that sticks, and then you have to talk to people. A lot of artists are reticent to talk to people, but you have to be able to promote your own work. But
yeah,
exactly. Whoever's agreeing with me, you've got to do that, and it's very important. But the thing is that you a lot of people, of course, I'm dealing specifically with the visual arts. You have to find the right price point, you have to find the right product, and you have to find the right presentation. There's, for example, at the Art Walk, you can go to the Art Walk, and if there's 500 artists, there's going to be about 25 artists that do these landscapes that are they're beachscape. They're brightly colored. They look like someone went to the wavy lines. They look like somebody went to the beach on acid. All right, so you're going to have about 25 people doing that. But there's this one guy named Steve Barton who owns that market because he came up with this concept. He does exactly the same type of painting that borders on cartoons, something you would see in Roger Rabbit, but he's created these wavy frames. The frames are all distorted, so not only is the painting a cartoon, but the frame is a cartoon, so the whole thing, so he owns the market. Something that everybody else is selling for $500, he's selling for $3,000 because he found a quote-unquote gimmick that set him out from the rest, and I'm sure performance artists will be right on top of saying that, yeah, there's a lot of people that sing or dance or whatever, you have to bring something special to the event, and that's certainly what happens at Art Walk. The particular item that I was successful with was Chinese calligraphy, and there was no one else doing Chinese calligraphy, so I had a captured market, but my price point was good. So I think early on people were using the word tricky. It's really tricky. That was it.
Well, it sounds like the bottom line is a business, and knowing what your competition is, making sure that all your stuff is professionally done, and treating it like a business.
Exactly. I mean, because it is a business. I mean, and speaking from my perspective, art is a product. I merchandise it and I sell it, whether it's my own artwork or whether it's the artwork for the gallery I work for. You know, it's what it is, and if you approach it that way. So any sound business practices are sound business practices, and when you look at it as a product and treat it accordingly, then you can be just that much farther ahead.
Excellent. You know, Antonio, I know you have some thoughts on this, but let me let everybody know, Antonio's doing a two-part show, and you can hear last night's show on the archives. Antonio, tell us about next week's show for you.
Well, I mean, one of the things that I'm just really fascinated by these traditional views of the arts as being like sort of these elitists above the fray, you know, only for the intellectual class kinds of, which I don't understand where. I mean, I understand where some of it comes from, but, you know, there are so many people who are trying to make a living for doing their art, whether it's music, whether it's dancing, whether it's poetry, spoken word, whether it's visual arts. And, you know, not every artist, unfortunately, is a millionaire, but they do it because they have to, or they want to. In some cases, they have to. So what I've been fascinated with is, you know, here are folks who are heading up organizations, in some cases small organizations. Then, of course, there are institutions who, you know, contribute in so many ways to the community around them, whether it's an economic impact or whether it's a community development impact. And I'm just fascinated that the city of Long Beach, and I mean when I say the city of Long Beach, I'm talking about both the city government as well as actually many people who live in the city, who think of the arts as some kind of frivolous hobby thing. Why do we care? This is not important. And I'm thinking to myself, there's so many wonderful things that happen, both on a small scale and a large scale. So I wanted to deal with the economic and community development impacts of the arts. What happens when a small community organization loses funding? What's the impact on their audience? What's the impact on the people who perform with them? And so we started on Monday. We interviewed a number of people, everything from, you know, a dance company to the Jazz Angels. And this coming Monday, we're going to continue it. We're going to have a couple of elected officials on that we're still firming up. We hope to have the president of Museum of Latin American Art on to talk about what a major institution that is and what impacts it has. And we're going to be talking to some other people as well. But we got to do a better job of educating people in this town about why the arts are important. I mean, look, you know, an artist, they're busy trying to take care of their business, you know. They're too busy, you know, trying to do their art and in some cases pay their rent. So it's up to us, I think, the advocates that are with them. And also it's up to, I think, the artists as well. But we've got to get this message out that this city without the arts would be a graveyard.
Exactly. And your show on Monday is what time?
It'll start at 8 o'clock. It goes from 8 to 9 p.m. It'll be on blocktalkradio.com/reimaginingLongBeach.
Excellent. And look, we have another caller on the line. I think I recognize this number. We're going to bring him up. Hello, caller.
Hello.
What's going on?
Hello.
There they are.
You there?
Some dog issues tonight.
Hello?
You hear us? Michelle, can you hear us?
Oh, yeah. Hey, I didn't know if you were talking to me. I can. You're breaking up. You guys are breaking up a little bit tonight.
Yeah, you know what? The thing keeps dumping us out. I don't know what's going on.
That's really weird. What if you called in on your phone?
Hey, we've already thought of that one.
Hey,
it's definitely a Blog Talk issue today.
Really cool show, cool stuff. I've been listening and I'm learning a lot.
You're learning. You are very successful at this business, and I know that you been on both. What suggestions do you have for new artists, new emerging artists of all and trying to make it, you know, in their craft and not flipping burgers?
Because I've been, I constantly go to both ends of the spectrum, you know, the ebb and flow of the financial thing. And I think that for me, my experience is the words business and art, or business and music in my case, is definitely two words that I wish didn't have to belong in the same sentence, but they do, you know? And if we're going to make a living doing what we love to do and what we are, you know, it's like anything else. It's hard to treat it like a job when you're an artist. It's hard to think about even making money from what you're doing sometimes. I have a real and have had a problem with that for a long time. But the truth is that I need to make very much want to make a living for a long time. And I think that treating it like a business, person who spoke before me was talking about treating it like a product, you know, thinking about if I have a CD, I'm basically selling, you know, cereal or something, or I'm selling Girl Scout cookies, you know, whatever it is. I have to treat it like it's not a piece of me.
Yeah.
You know? And the other thing is that I think musically is the performance aspect of it, and that's very different, I think, than other types of art, because we, and especially with art walks and projects that are happening in our communities, most of the time the musicians are not paid, and so for the performances, and it's very, very, very difficult, and I think sometimes because we're in a city that is, there's so many great musicians and great artists that sometimes I think that we're willing to work for money or for no money. And sometimes I think that we need to stand up for ourselves a little bit, and
yeah.
It's okay to do that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
One of the problem is you can hear, like, what benefits you at each time, right? Is it more beneficial to get the exposure at this point in time and not make the kind of money that I want to make at this event, or is this the event that I need to make some money at?
Are you there?
Yeah, we're here.
Oh. Okay, I'm sorry.
Problems there.
I think the word exposure just needs to be expunged from the. If there's going to be that much exposure, then there is going to be enough money to pay the artist, and I'm very, very strong with that. And when people talk to me now about exposure, I can't tell you how many times I've been told that there's going to be exposure. And what does that mean to a performing musician? What does that mean? Does that mean that you're going to get discovered? And, you know, I mean, Does that mean you're going to get three more people on your mailing list? There's a lot of ideas of what exposure is, and I think that the truth is that we show up. I had somebody tell me once that I should play for free because everyone else was, and B, because it was people expected it, and the community didn't want to show up and pay whatever it was. I would think I was charging $6 a time, and because nobody else was charging, and they didn't want to pay that fee. And I said, well, I would love to walk into on one of those nights to walk into a restaurant and get a free meal, but they're not giving their meals away, you know?
Right.
Why are we giving our work away?
I have to agree 110% on this. I'm Paul, and I'm coming from the plastic arts, but so many of the artists that I have worked with have said, I'm going to earn a living from my artwork, and I'm going to get paid for it, and I think that musicians should do the same thing. I know it's difficult, but I think she's exactly right. If you're performing, you spent your whole life, and you poured everything into it, and you're going to come out there and do what it is you do, you deserve the right to be paid. Now, this is America. You deserve the right to be paid for your efforts. And if they're not going to pay you, then you need to be somehow get together a solid front and make it happen. It's absolutely critical.
You know, can I just jump in here? This is Antonio. I have to tell you, I mean, I am so tired of hearing both promoters, nightclub, club people, and everybody else who seems to want to extract a dime from artists, from musicians, as well as other kinds of performers. You know, this idea that, you know, first of all, nothing is free. Your labor, the amount of the effort that artists put into their work. I mean, look, I'm not an art, you know, I don't consider myself anything other than an advocate, but I have seen musicians, you know, rehearse for hours, and people work for hours, you know, writing and stuff, and they do it for the love of it, but they know they have to pay the rent. So I just think it's simple fairness that they be paid, and I agree with, you know, Shell. I mean, Jesus Christ, at what point do you stop being doing something for the exposure? You know, I always wonder, what the hell does that even mean? You know, I mean,
I think I understand when you're about things like that. I think a lot of times with people selling their apps or things like that, it's a number, and you could be working a gallery. It has a lot of it coming through there, but you have to have the right kind of traffic to be able to sell your work. With that, at events where a few people have come, and we've had events where thousands of people come through.
You know what? You know what, Keith? You may have to come back on. You may have to reboot again.
Swift's gone, but I think he's gone someplace there. And I have to tell you this, as an art dealer and as someone who's involved in business, I got to tell you, Michelle, when they're telling you exposure, they're conning you. It's a con. They're trying to get something for free from you. And if you, I don't know your whole, you know, situation, but you've got to say no to that because it's a con. I mean, if I can get somebody to do put their art in my gallery for free, I'll do it. I'm conning them, but I know it, and I'm honest about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Having problems right now with the, we're having problems right now with the speaker again, but I think you're definitely right, Paul, with the idea that we've put on events, and we've helped organize events. We've attended events, and you're always there's that hard spot where you need to the people that show up need to be able to make a living or make a not necessarily a living in that event, but they need to be able to it was worth coming today. And so many times, people who are running the events, they want a free ride. You know, they want somebody to come in and play or perform for free, somebody to show the art for free, and you know, because they've got something else that they're charging at the door, or they're trying to sell something else somewhere else. So we need to be really careful as artists to make sure that we're getting valued, especially
that's
performance
it.
Artists.
That's
you
it.
Know, free performance art is just, it's really tough. I mean, you know, and exposure just doesn't usually count for much. Is it the mic?
No, it's one thing, this is Paul again, but, if I attend an art event, I have to pay for my booth. But I'm paying for my booth with the possibility that I may sell artwork and break even or get ahead. A performer is their performance is their art, and they should be paid for doing that. But it's that straightforward, and it sounds easy on the phone and on blog radio, but that's really what it should be.
Yeah,
you know,
I think the problem is that sometimes musicians get scared, get frightened off by people that will say, especially
right.
in this city, because there are cities that are paying a lot for the musicians. But, you know, again, being in a city with a lot of talented people and a lot of people that are real hungry and want to just get out there and just be heard and play and learn and practice their craft and get in front of people. And, you know, and there are people that will work for, I mean, everybody says that we don't do pay to play. We don't do pay to play. I've never met anyone, and a lot of people still do. And no one of those promoters has ever said we do pay to play. They do it in very interesting ways. Now, these days, they say that you have to you're contracted to bring at least 30 people in on a Tuesday night at midnight. We'll give you the midnight slot, and you know if you don't bring those, you don't have to pay anymore. But if you don't bring those 30 people in, then you have to, you won't get basically your money. Like they'll take your money off of the top of what that money off of the top of what they made, and then you might get a few bucks after that. And it's really they're really getting creative in how to get free entertainment, free art. And I think that for musicians that are coming out, I do think that there is hopefully some solidarity that will happen in again, because I know that it was for a while where people came together, musicians came together and said, okay, look, we're not going to do this. We do deserve this. It's okay. You know, I mean, so many of us are also also have self-esteem issues and don't believe sometimes that we, you know, are worth getting paid for our art. And I think that's a big thing with a lot of musicians too. And so maybe one of the reasons why we do what we do, but so we come up against these promoters that are very aggressive sometimes, and very assertive aggressive in different ways, and kind of go, oh, well, this is what everybody's doing. What do you mean you're not going to do it? I'm just going to move on. And we kind of get scared and go, okay, I'll do it. Just once. I'll do it this once.
Michelle,
you know,
is there a blacklist for these people? I mean, you guys should put together a blacklist. Say, Joe Smuccatelli is a smuck. I'm telling you, blacklist these people. That's part of the solidarity.
You listen to Radio and Blog Talk Radio?
Whoa,
you're listening to Super Show Radio at Blog Talk Radio. If you want to give us a call, it's 917-889-7449. If you want to be heard, press 1 on your phone so we know you want to be heard. We have a lot of people on the line. If you don't want to, just continue to listen. Paul's got a point there, Michelle. What do you think is the thing to do? I mean, I think as far as the arts go, and we're talking a variety of mediums. I know that each one has a different take on the thing, but what do you think is the thing to do? Do all the musicians get together and say we refuse to do this? You're still going to have the up and comers that are going to say screw that. I got to do what I got to do. How do we work? How do we assure that people are getting passed out there?
Get lots of therapy. But you know what? I really think that it's a personal preference. Some people don't mind it. Some artists do. I personally do. I don't like not getting paid because I have bills to pay, and this is what I do all day long. And so, you know, so I think that one of the things that for me, just personally, is in my own backyard. I try to keep my own world as much as I can, I try to talk to the – I talked to somebody the other night. I had a conversation with a guy that sent me an email. Like, we all get, you know, a gazillion emails saying, hey, you can – you know, we have a slot open for you here, and you can come and play. And they'll you'll get there, and they'll have five bands in a night. If it's, you know, it's an old musician's thing. They'll have five bands in a night. Nobody gets paid. And they have free entertainment all night long, and they say that they're going to bring industry people in to hear you. And
yep.
Really, really, it does not happen. Industry people do not go out anymore. Like, they don't. There's no like record executives going out to these clubs because there's not a lot of a scene in LA. But what happens? What I'd like to do is, like, in this conversation that I had with this guy the other day, he said, well, here's what we do, and this is, you know, we don't do pay to play, but you have to bring in 25 people, and da da da. And I said, look, I did get your email. I want to thank you for considering me. Here's how I do it. And I kind of turned it around. And I think that they, and it shocks them when you do that. And I think as artists, if we do just literally stand up while, like I do that while I'm talking on the phone sometimes with people that don't want to pay me, I'll stand up. Now, not that it's not okay to not get paid sometimes. If the cause is right, hell yeah. Hell yeah. But, you know, for going out when somebody's making money, we should all split it. If someone's making money, we should split it. So literally standing up when I'm making a phone call sometimes will help, and I will just turn it around and say, I understand, that's cool, that's how you do it, instead of fighting with them and saying you're full of shit, because it doesn't get me anywhere. I usually now will say, well, this is what I've been doing, and I have good references, and if you'd like, you know, I can, you can call them, whatever, but you know, I this is how I do it. And then they kind of go, oh, well, okay, well, maybe we can be workable. I mean, this guy the other night, oh, I can work with you then on the, I said, no, thank you, because I don't want to support a club like that.
Okay, can I just give you guys another example? This is Antonio. Another quick example that's not in the music industry, but in the television industry. For many years, for as far back as I can remember, there was this game that everybody played, which was people wanted to break into the business. What they would do is they would come and become interns. Now, I'm not talking about a college intern where you get credit for your, you know, for working. I'm just talking about you show up and you're basically a volunteer. Well, at one point, I guess the State Labor Relations Board decided, are you paying these people? Wait a second. What do you mean they're interns? Are they getting credit for their work? No, they're getting work experience. And I'm going, well, are you paying them anything for their coming to your job? Are you paying their gas? Are you paying? Well, what they ended up saying was, sorry, guys, you can't do that. And now, of course, people still do that under the table now. But the Labor Department decided was that that's – you basically are getting free labor. That's called slavery. So basically, above the table, you're not supposed to do that anymore. You have to pay people for their quote-unquote internships. But the reality is that, you know, people still want to, you know, break into the business. And what they finally find out sooner or later is, how long before you break into the business? You know, 6 months, 8 months, a year? Is a year and a half long enough that you'll break into the business? You know, like I said, you know, we have a word for that. It's called slavery.
Well, you know, speaking of that, Antonio, you know, it's acting around and the casting notices for a lot of things each day. And lots of times you'll have people that are working. I've been on sets of things where people have actually said, you know, this is a new thing. You have the potential to be seen. A lot of people are going to shop this around all the networks. And you go in there, and when you're trying to break in, you do some things like that. And you find out the guy sitting next to you is getting paid just because he said, I'm not working for free. So I think you got to step up and embrace your craft. And let people know, like Michelle said, you say, I won't do it, you know. Sometimes they find money when they want to.
Yeah,
that's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. No, and it is illegal, by the way. Yeah, I hate to say it. It is illegal.
You know, it's getting close to the time we have to wrap this segment. I don't thank you for being on. I'll give everybody a chance to have one last word. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your art and where people can find you if they want to and what you're doing these days, and we'll just go down the line. That would be for Paul.
My art, I do my art for myself. And, you know, one of the things when I was doing the art shows is that I began mass producing my art. And I'm working on a new project, and I'm only doing four pieces. And I have no intention of any, you know, they'll certainly be shown to a variety of people. And if somebody wants to purchase one, they can. But I'm not doing them to purchase them. I'm doing to express something that I'm feeling. And that, and I have an advantage. You know, I'm an artist, but I make my living as an art dealer, and I do well at that. So I have the luxury of creating anything I want to and putting it where I want to put it. And if you like it, great. And if you don't, fine. Who cares? It's not your problem. It's my problem.
Well, you know, as a proud owner of a Paulodopoulos piece,
thank you.
It's amazing.
Yes, one of my collectors.
It's amazing work. And if anybody ever has the opportunity to see it and purchase it, I'm sure they will, because it's beautiful. And, Paul, I want to thank you for coming on the show with us tonight.
Thank you. It was fun.
Take a day to join us. Thank you. And let's bring up, let's Misty. See, are you with us there, Misty? Misty.
Yes, I wasn't sure. Okay, yes, I'm still here. So
tell everybody about what you're doing and how they can get a hold of you and see what you got going on.
Okay, hi. I'm currently here at the cellar for the Long Beach Experiment, which is every Wednesday, and that's one of the things I do support, the art events that are happening in town. Another, for my own art, I'm a multidisciplined artist who has been spending a lot of time songwriting. Hello, Michelle. And with that, one of the things I've been doing is to really look at the publishing aspect. Like, I'm really interested in music placement. And so instead of going around to a lot of clubs, entertaining, pay-for-play, and all these other things, I've just really been focused on writing the songs and connecting more with my publishing organization, ASCAP, and going to their expos and meetings and learning more about how to get the music to work so that, you know, it will eventually pay off later. And aside from that, I am currently looking for funding for the East Village Farmers Market, where I'm asking entertainers to come in and provide entertainment for the public every Saturday between 9 and 2. And I'm really excited about that, because I am so, so, so excited to be in a position to hopefully pay artists, hello, in the East Village. And that's kind of my, my pet project for now. And as well as doing some workshops and writing some children's stories and all kinds of different things. Oh, and I can be found most times strolling through the East Village at 430 First Street at the Catalyst Space office, and online if they can Google MSTMUSZE, various pages will pop up.
Well, thanks for participating tonight. We really appreciate you support, and have fun at the cellar, and I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, sounds good. You guys have a good night and great radio show. Bye.
Thank you. Antonio, speak to us, brother.
Oh, I want my money back from Block Talk Radio. They're messing with your mic, man. Well, first of all, I really enjoyed this conversation. I think that you know, I know it's rough when you're first getting started, and it's easy to kind of succumb to these, oh, I'm going to make you a star because I'm going to expose you to 20 people. But you know what? You just got to really learn, because, you know, you can get exploited really easily. And take the advice of people who've been doing this for a long time, is that you don't want to ever let yourself be exploited. You do want to, you know, at the minimum, get paid a minimum, and then or work something out with the promoter. You know, there's always a way to work something out. Beyond that, I'm glad that we're dealing with this story. I don't think we talk enough about these kinds of issues, and I want to join with you guys seriously in the future and with our buddies at 562 City Life and shine a light more on this and see how we can help artists, become successful in whatever way we can.
Absolutely. Well, thanks a lot, Antonio. Thanks for joining us. Everybody check out Antonio's show next week, Monday night, where he does part two. And if you didn't hear part one, check out his Blog Talk channel and listen to part one and be a part of the conversation and the experience on part two next Monday night. Thanks for joining us, Antonio. I appreciate your input as always, and we will be seeing you pretty soon.
Thank you, guys. Bye.
Take it easy.
Michelle, my bell. What do you got going? I know you're playing at the Brixton pretty soon. You've been at the Soda, the Edge of Madness out. What's happening with you in the near future for everybody to know?
Doing a benefit for the Gulf in Santa Monica on the 18th. Wednesday, actually. I don't know what the date is, but it's this coming Wednesday. At an art
Today's
gallery,
the 18th. Michelle, I think you missed your gig.
Oh, shit. God. Yeah, and that's coming up Wednesday, and it's an art gallery in Santa Monica, and they're hosting a benefit for New Orleans, so we'll be doing that. And I think I might be heading there in October to do an event there, which should be fun. And MichelleMedJourney.com website has all the dates and stuff. But I do want to say thanks for opening up this forum, because I know we can get very passionate about when we talk about money and art and getting paid or not, I think it would be interesting to talk to have kind of like promoters and the people that put these art walks and things on. So, yeah, that would be really interesting to have a talk, like kind of a conversation between the two, the artists and the promoters or whatever. So, I don't know.
Absolutely.
Anyway, thanks, you guys.
Michelle and Eva on First Fridays, because we'll be there with you. But I want to thank you for joining us, as always, and being in the conversation.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Thanks, Michelle. And the rest of the gang is still here with us, and we're going to be talking the latter half of the session here. But let's go to a quick break, give you the Sunday market report once it comes back up. I'm telling you, the screen keeps dumping on me today. So we'll get back to that. But thank you. You're listening to Sweeps World on Blog Talk Radio, where we are every Wednesday night. If you want to give us a call, the number is 917-889-7449. You can always follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And we'll be back to you in just a few minutes.
Hey everybody, this is Sam Parnia from Gourmet Conspiracy here at the Long Beach Sunday Market, and today we have a new vendor, and it is OC Jerky. And with me from OC Jerky is Joshua. How did your company get started?
Well, for many years I was in plumbing sales, and like a lot of people, got laid off. And about 4 or 5 months ago, was looking for something new to sell, and I decided that this would probably be the best thing for me.
What type of jerkies do you guys offer?
All of our jerkies made out of tri-tip. That's one of the most important things that you should know about our jerky. We have a teriyaki line, which starts with our mild teriyaki and goes all the way up to a habanero. We have the same thing in what we call sort of a barbecue sweet. It's a brown sugar-based sweet. We then have what we call our cowboy jerky. Cowboy jerky is a very dry, traditional type of beef jerky. It's really good for hiking and camping. It won't get you sticky or anything like that.
Did you develop all these flavors yourself?
No. Jerky Hut has been around for many, many years.
Okay.
And this is all of their creation. I'm just the person out of Orange County that sells it.
Where else do you sell? Do you sell just here at the market?
We'll be here on Sundays.
Mm-hmm.
On Thursdays, every single Thursday I'm at the Anaheim Farmers Market.
Okay.
The Sunday market will vary. I do a lot of, I will be doing trade shows and conventions and so forth. So if I'm not at a trade show or convention, I will be here in Long Beach.
Do you have a store?
I don't, but you can always get us at ocjerky.com.
Can they call you?
They can. They can contact me at 714-788-0611. That is my cell phone. Get me night or day. If you're within the local Orange County, Anaheim, Fullerton, Orange area, if you spend more than $40, I'll actually deliver it to your home for free.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Nice. Well, thank you for talking with us.
I
hope you guys keep coming back. This is Sam Pagno for the Long Beach Sunday Market Report, wishing you all a prosperous and healthy week.
On this week's Friends of Swoop's World segment, we spotlight two local businesses, Alfred's English Gardens and Richco Gates. Kathy Alford of Alfred's English Gardens was recently chosen by the City of Long Beach Water Department to help educate homeowners about alternative low-water garden options. Visit the website and click on eSmart Gardens for case studies and photo galleries of gorgeous gardens in Long Beach. Go to www.kathyalford.com. Richco Gates. Richco is a local builder that specializes in locally handcrafted outdoor woodwork built specifically for each client. Richco believes in doing a great job and having fun in the process. He builds gates in a variety of styles. Check out the photo gallery at richcogates.com for more information. If you'd like to become a friend of Swoop's World and have your business mentioned on our air, send us an email at swoopsworld@gmail.com. And back to our guests right after this.
Language.
And welcome back to Swoop's World on Blog Talk Radio. And let me tell you about another friend of Swoop's World with some things that have been going on with him recently. You know, we always talk about Inkpeace. Mark Hawkins and Inkpeace, a good friend of ours, who sells environmentally responsible ink and toner cartridges for way less than the big box stores. Well, he's always been at over there on Atlantic inside the copy house. And unfortunately, all the there was three businesses inside the copy house. The pair and the landlord wants just one business there after one of the businesses had to leave. So he had to move out. But Mark Hawkins and Inkpeace are still going to be going on. And you just go ahead and send him an email if you want to send him an email and get in touch with him. It's orchids, O-R-C, orchids at inkpeace.com. He will still be doing this thing, but he won't have a brick-and-mortar business for a while, but he's still out there helping supplying the schools with environmentally responsible wares, I should say, as far as toner cartridges and things go. So don't forget about Inkpeace. Say hi to Mark and let him know Swoop's World sent you. Oh, we're going to wrap up the conversation we just had about the business of art and Scott Godfrey, our good friend here, he's gonna wrap it for us.
Well,
and we'll move on to other things.
First of all, I would like to say that I am shocked that someone who does something good for the people, like this dude you're talking about right now, is getting fucked over.
You're surprised.
That's shocking.
Yeah.
So he's helping just amazing. Schools. His business has the word peace in it, and he's getting fucked over. Get out of here, Pete.
I know. It's a surprise.
I am. Once
again. And the beans. I forgot who I had here.
So my latest art project that I'm working on through the City of Long Beach right now is I smile at strangers. That's my piece that I've been working on lately. I've been getting a lot of responses. I have yet to collect any money over it. And, I've gotten some interesting responses, a couple of phone numbers, that none of which have turned out to be lucrative. And,
are you not going to pay to smile?
smile piece. With ink cartridges, kind of business model.
And they're going to kick you out.
Some jerkwad decided. But of course, the irony of all this pay-to-play conversation and whatnot is I'm not getting a dime for my time right now.
You are not.
I wonder if there's a check going from Michelle Mangione.
You're getting a hell of a lot of exposure.
Right? That's right. These dudes are all naked. Exposed. Everyone in there has a lot of lint and a lot of nature.
Whole new meaning to exposure.
It's a whole new meaning to exposure. It was fine until Ray Pope showed up, and then it was debauchery all over the place. You know, we got Taylor Nelson here, our local food guy. Chris, as always, is on another vacation.
He's remarkably mobile for a man of his time.
Yeah. Big guy, what a girl.
Yeah, Chris split town, so I went out to dinner by myself tonight. I had a table for one, which was something I haven't experienced probably ever.
You're a frat guy. Frat guys never have a table for one.
No, unless they're shopping. you guys put me on a quest probably a month ago now.
Yes, we did.
To try to find someplace in Long Beach that serves up all sorts of delicious animals ground up and stuffed into their own intestines.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'll be damned if I still have not found one. I searched all over the digital world today trying to find any kind of German restaurant, period, in Long Beach, and or any place that just said they served a lot of sausages. And, you know, I mean, we've got plenty. I'm not even going to do that one. There was a place down on 2nd Street until apparently about a week ago called the Dog House that was kind of a sausage R Us kind of place.
Yeah.
And so I thought, well, if nothing else, if it sucks, I can go next door and check out the new place down there. I went down, and the Dog House is
Whoa.
No more.
There was a guy painting it today.
Yeah, the Dog House is done. So I went next door to Smoke with a Q-U, and that's where Mykonos used to be a few years back, and more recently Barry's Beach Shack.
Beach House or something, yeah.
Which never really caught on, for reasons that I'll leave.
Yeah.
But Smoke was interesting. You know, they're kind of going for they call themselves Texas Barbecue. Unfortunately, they didn't have any kind of a barbecue sampler sort of plate. I wanted to get as many different meats as I could on one plate. They weren't having it. So I went for pulled pork. Luckily, they do give you all of their sauces right up front, you know, and none of the meat comes just smoked.
Uh-huh.
They don't, it's not already drenched, so you get to pick and choose how much of which sauce you want. They're still working out the kinks because they're pretty new, but the food was good. I think they were you know, kind of running around like chickens with their heads cut off because, you know, they've been open for about a week. But I've got to get back and try some other stuff. I went with the waitress's recommendation for the pulled pork, which I like, but I'm going to try the ribs or maybe the turkey legs next time. Cause, I went to the Orange County Fair a couple weeks ago and got one of those turkey legs. And that, you know, it's trashy as all hell, but it's a lot of fun.
What kind of trashy would that be?
It was nature's meat on a stick, man.
You know, you speak about all the sauces and stuff, and everybody kept telling me to go to this one barbecue place. You know, I've been telling you there's no decent barbecue places in Long Beach, and I haven't been to Smoke, but I'm going to still stand by that because I wandered into Famous Dave's, which I've heard wonderful things about, and I was let down. I think the place over there in Long Beach Town Center is actually better. The place next to Lucille's, so I don't know.
Roadhouse,
yeah. But even that's not the greatest, but it's better than. Am I humble?
Yeah, I have mixed feelings about any barbecue joint that puts that much emphasis on their sauce. It should be meat and smoke, more or less.
A little dry rub, you know?
Yeah. And it was funny because they called it Texas barbecue, but it almost seemed like Carolina. You know, none of the sauce was super vinegar like you get over in North Carolina.
Yeah,
but I do have to give props to their sides because they had jalapeno cheese grits. And as a white kid from Southern California, I didn't get a lot of grits. I got cream of wheat, which was as close as I could get.
I had both. Remarkably enough.
But, I love grits, and these were good ones. So that was a definite high point for the night. I'm going to have to try them again soon when they're a little more together. But that's what I got for tonight, guys.
Ray, what do you think about the barbecue situation here in Long Beach, man? You're a man of many tastes.
I like Corky's over there on Redondo.
Mm-hmm. Right. The 10th and Redondo?
Yeah, and they got the hobo platter. That's good. They got incredible green.
Their links are a little lacking, man. I'm a link guy. I like to have links.
Is that the deal?
I mean, as far as barbecue is concerned, it's a good carried away.
I want to make my way out to Mecca. Was that Memphis in May or something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to check that out because I mean I don't know all of the regional stuff about barbecues. I like the dry rub.
Yeah.
I know you can ask for a dry rub over at Roadhouse. A
lot of places would do it without any.
Yeah, I like it that way. And Johnny Reb's. You know, ironically, when I go to Johnny Reb's, I don't do the barbecue that much.
Yeah, Johnny Reb's is barbecue light, man.
Yeah.
That's good. I mean, I know the white guys like it. I don't mind it. I think it's the cool thing about Johnny Reb's, I think, as far as, like, Peter and we were talking about, is our kids love it because they can throw peanut shells in the floor.
I mean, that's why.
Yeah, I could pay
it's
50,
a total
kid.
Yeah. Kid-friendly play. But, you know, when you're talking, like, for how much you end up spending.
I could have bought them peanuts and swept that bath myself.
Yeah. I could pay someone to sweep up after them.
You know, Scott's a world traveler. You know, you're a barbecue guy now. I mean, you've been everywhere. You're from the East Coast to San Francisco to Europe and everything.
Yeah.
What's the barbecue situation in the Scott Wells' humble estates over there, man?
Well, I have to say that nobody's mentioned it, but I like the Walker's barbecue pit over there on Carson.
Oh, about Carson little, golf course there?
Yeah,
I haven't checked that out. I haven't checked that out, but I heard it's really good.
the pulled pork sandwich is really good. Actually, it's a Memphis pork sandwich. It's very, very good.
It's 2 hours down from where the coffee, bean, and tea leave once was.
That's right.
There's a long list of once was.
You know what, though? Besides, they got a great mac and cheese, really good coleslaw.
Yeah.
It's pretty solid and really good service.
I have to admit that Scott's made some recommendations in the past that have turned out to be spot on. So, you know, you and your next door neighbor have told me about that place, so I'm going to have to head on down there because, you know, you guys are.
One of my favorite things about that place is there's a kid that works there who hates barbecue. And he's like the nicest kid. He's like 18 years old. And the first time I went in there, I'm like, so, you know, I'm sort of talking to him, like, so, you know, what's your favorite thing here? And he's just like, man, I hate this shit. I'm like, you know what? He's like, I don't like the smoke. I don't like the flavor. I don't like the sauce. I don't like any of it. So
was his name Keith? Because I had a kid working for me at my coffee house who hated coffee.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, dude, you need to at least taste it so you know if the everything's working properly, everything. He pinched his nose, tasted a shot of espresso.
I remember when I started working there, I said, so what's your drink? Because you had yours, I had mine. Anybody that worked there had their drink, right?
Smoothies.
That was the one advantage, right? None of us were getting rich, but we got free coffee. And I said to him.
So you were just in it for the exposure?
He's in it for the exposure.
Soup didn't even pay me. Totally.
Where's Antonio?
And his wife's an attorney.
And I said to him, so what's your drink? He says, I don't drink coffee.
I said, what are you doing here?
Because my dad owns the shop.
So, I'd at least develop a habit just so that I could get something out of it. Oh, he wasn't getting paid either.
He wasn't getting paid. His pay was, hey, you're going to take over this dynasty someday. Jumps on him.
A broken mat. Three beers in the fridge.
No, those beers will be gone. Because, you know, that's another thing. He doesn't drink beer either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, yes.
It's all got to end something.
It's, yeah, you just can't last forever, man.
First the Mings, and now the Wolves.
Hey, what do you think of Mings?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Oh, crazy stuff. you know, when we Peter and I, when you took our kids camping last week, and we were, my son, he's a kind of an inquisitive guy, and every time he asks Peter a question, he can't answer. So I said, we need to do a segment called Ask Peter, man, because the guy, if he doesn't know it, he's got a good bullshit quotient, man.
Wow, that might be true.
Because every time Sean asked him about something, he had an answer. I mean,
it sounded great.
It's like, well, no, this and that and that. The Romans and the Greeks and blah, blah, blah. Like, wow, dude.
He was asking.
I nodded off a few times in class, but I would have picked up some of this. Hey, we got to stump Peter, man. Anybody got a question for Peter?
No,
take mythology. That's his specialty.
Okay.
We got a college professor sitting over here, man. He's got some polycyclists.
We should stump him.
He can't be stumped, man.
He was telling us before the show started, he'd be doing fractions.
He said, I'd be ciphering.
School doesn't start for another week and a half. My brain's still in the closet. Suitcase up in the back of the closet with a bunch of blankets in front of it.
Yeah. Well, we'll dig out when it's time.
Right next to the canister of MediWeek. I didn't say that.
Ray, what do we got on tap for next week, man? Ray wrote a segment called The Buzz. Huh?
Yeah. We might have to change that up. Maybe we'll do an Ask Ray segment. We're talking to people about doing an Ask Ray segment.
That's right. Look, he's just moving on. Give him an inch, take a mile, man.
I'm drunk.
It's not going to be Juice World much longer.
It's not
going to
be like Roman Empire. We'll have to worry about Caesar. No. You know, next week, I think the medical marijuana joints are supposed to pull their licenses, or at least the illegal ones go under on the 28th or something. Maybe we'll have that story.
You know, I still go back to the fact that I really find it really difficult to get on board with the city. If we're going to accept the fact that these are legal businesses, to gouge them and charge them any more than you charge Rite Aid or
Savant or...
Regardless of what business it is, how do you zone somebody out who's already been in business?
Oh, that's government, man. It's like eminent domain, man. Let me tell you, I used to work with a guy. We drove around the city of Los Angeles for, hours on end.
You mean you were a cop?
Yeah, that's it. Who invited you? We worked the overnight shift, right? And we'd always drive, he kind of, in the early mornings before it was time to go home, he'd park in this weird area over near LAX, which obviously used to be neighborhoods. And it was just driveways, but no, the little dip for the driveway, but no houses or anything. And then on the street, obviously houses were once there. He'd sit there and he goes, okay, we got about, 15 minutes. We'll head on back to the station. So we sit there. So one day I said to him, I go, why do you always park here, man? Because, the station's way on the other side of town. He goes, I used to live here. I go, really? He says, yeah. He says, till eminent domain when they were going to expand the airport.
Yeah.
He said,
the roads are still there.
The roads are still there.
Even now.
The sidewalks are still there. But the house is
Gone.
Really?
Yeah. You can see if you drive.
Down towards Playa del Rey.
Just north of the runways there. And you can see, you sit on the hill, you go look out at Duckwater Beach. And
yep.
Yeah. So when you, it's no big deal for the cities or government. We got a government expert here to come along and then to take over what's already been put out there. But I really, really have a problem with them sitting in there talking about, when they brought up the fact that they're going to start charging the tens of thousands of dollars just to apply, non-refundable.
Oh, yeah,
For apply for the business license, and we might give it to you.
Right. Lottery.
Yeah.
Is that for the, you mean for Medi?
Yeah. So the way it was, I don't know if it happened this way, but the conversation went that they were going to have to put down $10,000, and whether they won the lottery or not, their $10,000 was gone, right? Isn't that the way they?
Why don't we just have Guido just step up and put a gun in your head?
Yeah.
So you're going to, we're
non-refundable
deposit.
Whether you get
and we'll be back next week. government, man. It's a steady government. I mean, you know, we're a step ahead of frickin' Bell, but not much, man. I don't know.
And who knows where all these new taxes will go.
Ray knows. Ray knows where the bodies are buried in City Hall, man.
They're cold now, man.
Don't stat your limitations, man.
We'll have a guest.
Oh, blurb. Change his voice.
I thought that's what the show was this morning, or tonight.
Yeah.
Was that like the anonymous version of Block Talk?
That was pretty much it. Yeah,
my son had, for when we need to do that, my son has the Darth Vader ball wall.
You'll be talking about that.
That's right. I got the Toupane app on my iPhone there. So.
were you guys on vacation a couple of weeks ago? I didn't
last
see the council meeting. Yeah, last week. You see the council meeting before? I mean, you talk about council people kicking that can down the street, man. When they were trying to put that tax, the mini tax on the ballot, that was disgusting. I mean, these are like people like ducking and dodging. Oh, I don't want to tax the medicinal stuff. I don't mind taxing this. At the end of the day, you know, I mean, it was as hot as a potato could get for these folks, and it's pretty straight.
I got a question. I got a question for Taylor about your frat brother, man. Apparently, the last two or three important votes, he just had to go to the restroom, or he had to take a phone call.
Really?
He hasn't been there to make a vote.
Get some pretty cool emails about the new road.
The roads. I got those same emails
too. Yeah.
So, Ray, what was your? I mean, Taylor, tell us about what are your thoughts on that? And Ray was probably at the meeting. You know, this whole habits are hard to break. He probably
that's getting it fixed.
Yeah.
You know, Robert was in the fraternity a few years before I was. So he was always, you know, from what I understand, there was never a conversation that went down without him having the last word back then. I think he, I don't know, maybe he
was that on the record?
Well,
that was as on the record as a fraternity meeting.
my opinion is people who don't show up for controversial votes have higher aspirations.
Yeah, I think he obviously does. I don't care to comment one way or the other on whether I support it.
Come on,
you know, Robert, he's a politician. I mean, he changed his political affiliation 3 years ago.
But you see, this is my problem though. Is we give everybody a walk because we say, well, they're politicians.
Oh no, he doesn't get a walk.
Well, you have obviously. I know you have an opinion on this.
Me?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I'll tell you, if we're going to talk local politics, there's one local thing that I found kind of shocking lately, actually, because I actually don't get it. I read the Long Beach Press Telegram, I read my neighborhood newspaper,
and everything, everything longbeach.com, everythinglongbeach.com.
Not necessarily, no, but I did vote in the last couple elections, and I voted for Jimmy J., and Tonya came to my door a couple times, and I felt like she termed out, and maybe she should just take a walk. No offense to anybody who might have backed Tonya. But I will say I was really surprised in our local Cal Heights newsletter when she wrote this column, like, a couple weeks ago, like, thanking everybody, basically, so, like, saying in this little farewell address, basically, this letter. She did not congratulate Jimmy. Congratulate James at not what, and I thought the first thing you do is you say, first of all, I'd like to just congratulate James Johnson for his victory, and we're moving forward now with a new era, or whatever. She didn't mention his name. I thought that was really messed up.
The letter was written prior to the election, and it was written under the context of, should you not be reelected?
Mm-hmm.
You know, can you, like, about what we have done.
Mm-hmm.
That's really what it was.
But she knew who she would lose to. She would have lost two at that point, right?
There was some pretty heavy editing going on.
There was a couple write-ins.
I got like the five votes.
There was editing.
But no, the original letter did include, you know, should this, the intro was, whatever happens during the election, this is what.
Is this on the record?
This is on the record.
There's no motion anymore on the record.
We involved with that particular article, yes. And you know, the newsletter comes out, what, every 2 months now?
I find it interesting. A rebel that I'm sitting next to is a sticker for Protocol.
It was just kind of surprising. It was surprising to me. It seemed still funny. Especially since a page earlier was James's column or his letter that was like, first of all, I'd like to thank Tonya for all the great work that she's done, and da da da. It seemed very gracious. And then two pages later, it's just like, no mention. It was a pretty loud.
As we wind down here, this is my problem with politics.
Is bullshit?
Well, you know, we've had discussions. Is that you know, sports guys are better at, they're more gracious than politicians. You know, that's the Super Bowl tomorrow. They go, yeah, you got to play these guys. Well, they're a tough opponent. You know, they look good, and they got a good running back, this and the other. But you know, we hope to do our best out there. Then I kick them their ass. They beat them by 50 points. They go, you know, it was tough. You know, the first 3 minutes of the game, you know, they gave us all they got. Politicians will call everybody every name in a book, say they suck, and then the next day they go, oh, he was it was a great fight, and they're such a good person, he does so good for us, and that's bullcrap.
Yeah.
Either the guy sucked, and you beat him, or he didn't, and that's just, whatever. I'm done pontificating for the night. You know, hey, we want to thank Scott Godfrey, Ray Pope, Taylor Nelson, for joining Peter and myself here on Toots World. Once again, it's and all of our callers for participating. And look at that, for participating here. And we're here every Wednesday night, except for last Wednesday night. But we're here every Wednesday night at 9 o'clock on Blog Talk Radio. You can always find us on SwoopsWorld.com. Join us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. And if you want to call in during the show, it's 917-889-7449. Thanks a lot, Long Beach, and all of Southern California. We'll see you again next week. Good night, all.
Goodbye. Good night.